Hello, Roy here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to The Roy Green Show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
The Emergencies Act is still subject to an inquiry, and it was ongoing this past week in Ottawa, not public any longer, but ongoing. Well, public, yeah, but not on television. Public to a certain extent. And the Prime Minister's National Security Advisor, Jody Thomas, testified before a committee of members of Parliament and senators investigating the invoking of the Emergencies Act and spoke about concerns about a second truck convoy being planned to descend on Ottawa next February 17th to 21st. And Ms. Thomas has revealed the federal government is planning to take action. Well, we're going to talk to our guest about this. And our guest is Professor Christian Luprecht, Queen's University and Royal Military College, expert on national and international security. He testified this week at the Emergency Inquiry Roundtables in Ottawa. I also want to ask the professor what options Canada and Canada's police should be considering if there's going to be any follow-up convoy. Professor Luprecht's book is Intelligence as Democratic Statecraft. There's a new book coming up, and we'll talk about that in a couple of weeks' time. Christian, thank you very much for coming on the program again today. Why were you invited to testify specifically this week in Ottawa?
So people thought that the testimonies were over the week before, after we heard from sort of the key federal officials in this. But the commission had, and I think wisely, planned for a series of expert roundtables to enlighten some of the more specific conversations that were had with officials. So there were roundtables, in my case, for instance, on the financial dimensions, because if you remember, the Emergencies Act was used in order to assist with freezing some accounts and providing some accountability on the crowdsourcing. And I testified on the one with regards to police-government relations, in particular the question of when and under what circumstances can or should government direct the police, what is that relationship. But there were other roundtables, for instance, on basic rights and civil rights, and what does it mean to protest? Because everybody agrees widely in this country that you should have a right to peaceful protest. But of course, the convoy here raised interesting questions between, well, you know, if you're being unruly and obnoxious, do you still qualify for a right of peaceful protest? Do you get to bring your truck to a protest? And of course, some of the asymmetries, for instance, that we saw in the rule of law, where we had blockages of critical infrastructure in the year earlier, where the Emergencies Act was not invoked, and yet for a smaller protest that arguably caused less economic disruption, at least in Ottawa, not in our borders, the government felt it necessary to invoke the act. So what does it mean to have peaceful protest in Canada, and what sort of enforcement measures are appropriate? So these were sort of, I think, where the commission is looking more specifically at the recommendations that it may be looking to make, specifically recommendations in terms of changes in legislation, but also changes in regulation, in policy, and perhaps other recommendations in terms of some of the national security structure and infrastructure. But I think since it is a federal commission, it will look primarily, I suspect, at federal legislation and federal agencies. And provide, I think, more modest input on the provincial and the local side, and we'll leave that to Ontario to sort out, in particular since the Premier opted not to testify before the Commission on the grounds that this was a federal inquiry, and so the Fed should go at it.
Yeah. I hope that we don't lose sight of the significance, the ultimate significance of this inquiry. Yes, it's to determine whether or not the Emergencies Act was appropriately invoked, but it's also a look at setting the bar for the next time this may be deemed necessary by a federal government. Where is the bar now? Has the language of the Emergencies Act been compromised by opinion? I don't know. Maybe it has. Maybe it hasn't. But wouldn't you agree that that is maybe perhaps the most significant aspect of this, setting the bar for another government?
So I think there's several clear important nuances that I think you allude to here. One is the difference between was it right to invoke the act and was it justified to invoke the act. So was there actually the sufficient legal grounds on which the government could rationalize invoking the act. We can have arguments about, you know, what would be right for the government to do. But of course, in a constitutional democracy, we specifically have constraints imposed on government by the Constitution, by the Charter, in the case of the Emergencies Act, by the Emergencies Act itself. And so one of the interesting debates that I think came out of this was, is our understanding of national security sufficiently robust for the 21st century, our more realist, traditional understanding of national security that really doesn't cope well with things like political instability, economic instability, and so forth. I think the second important piece is that the challenge when these events happen, and especially when ministers and the agencies testify, everybody will always tell you they did a fantastic job, and this was sort of the best job they could possibly do. Government owns the narrative because they ultimately own all the data and the likes behind it. And so it's very difficult to look inside. And I think what we got here was from the commission was some level of transparency where we can cut through some of the narratives and some of the spin where we heard lots about funding from outside of the country. And then it turns out, well, there really wasn't a whole lot of funding from outside of the country. So where was the disconnect between what we were being told, for instance, by the prime minister and what then our security intelligence service ultimately told us? And I think the third is really understanding, is our legislation, is our system fit for purpose for the 21st century? And as you know, I've long argued that if our system had performed as intended, we would have never needed to invoke emergency measures to deal with a smaller number of protesters than we get for homecoming at Queen's University in Kingston every fall.
Yeah. The reason I brought that up is that there was interpretation of the act, subjective interpretation, brought into the public part of the inquiry. And this is after CSIS said, CSIS indicated that it did not, the language of the CSIS Act did not make it incumbent or appropriate, perhaps, to invoke the Emergencies Act. I know the opinion of the director was different as he spoke to the Prime Minister. We've been told that. But if language is going to be interpreted, then the language of this particular commission and the decision that they take on whether or not the Emergencies Act was appropriately or justifiably or legally invoked may be interpreted by another government that comes along and said, well, no, they didn't really mean that. They meant this. So this is why I'm getting what I'm getting at. The language has to be precise. It has to be understood and it has to be unequivocal.
The challenge is whether our understanding of national security in this country was too narrow, and that inhibited a comprehensive response. What do I mean by that specifically? This is not just a Canadian discussion. In Europe, the European Court just very recently interpreted national security very, very narrowly. And so there's a number of countries that are very concerned about their ability now to respond to potential national security matters. The challenge, I think, when you about what your definition ultimately is the federal agency. So the RCMP, for instance, can enforce pretty much any law that Parliament has passed, whereas most provincial forces, local forces enforce only the criminal code and a few other measures. And so when you get federal agencies involved, you have a much, much broader remit to enforce. So the question is, at what point do you get them involved? Because if we have to wait for an emergency every time to get them involved, clearly, that is the wrong threshold to have a comprehensive approach to the sort of convoy that we saw in February. Yeah.
Before we talk about Ottawa, February 17 to 21, Christian, can you just give me a quick idea, your sense of what's going on in China?
Well, I think this is what economists told you at the beginning also about Canada and other Western countries, that human nature simply doesn't respond well to being highly constrained for extended periods of time. And so you can impose these restrictions for briefer periods of time. But fundamentally, in terms of human nature, I mean, folks who live in China are no different than folks who live in Canada. And they don't like being locked up and confined and having many of their mobility sort of freedoms that are already highly constrained, even further constrained. And so I think this is bound to be seen. And my hypothesis on this is that all along, the COVID restrictions in China have always been simply an excuse for the government to essentially further constrain mobility by the Chinese out of concern over possible uprisings against Xi Jinping as he's trying to anoint himself as sort of quasi the new emperor before the Party Congress.
Yeah,
so I think
life.
Now that that's that's done, they're relaxing the restrictions.
Okay. Now, on this issue about a potential second convoy in Ottawa, or heading for Ottawa, and the dates that were mentioned by Ms. Thomas, February 17th to 21, what is your sense of this? And you and I talked about, you provided your perspective on what should have happened as far as police engagement was concerned the last time, so February of this year. What is your advice? What's your perspective on this now?
Well, first, let's make sure we don't twice become the laughingstock of the international community. First, when we look completely incompetent in responding to the most fundamental challenge to the rule of law that Canada had seen in decades. And then because we were so incompetent at responding that we felt we had to invoke an Emergencies Act to deal with a few obnoxious, unruly, but rather tenacious protesters. So I think we did ourselves no favor, especially with our key allies in the United States and Australia, the United Kingdom, and Europe. It really made us look not particularly competent and not particularly prepared. And given the relatively homeopathic contribution that Canada has made to regional international security, I think it reinforced the perception that Canada simply doesn't take security seriously. I think there's an opportunity here to think back and see it. Look at the many failures of agencies. So the intelligence failures in advising properly in terms of the posture that we need to take to respond, the ability to coordinate across local, provincial, and federal police forces and resources, and having the adequate resources in place, making sure we have not just a command and control structure that can adequately deal with protests, but also have the logistics, the intelligence, and the planning function so that we can respond dynamically. And I would hope that this time around, rather than the mayor of Ottawa, the prime minister and the premier taking political pot shots at each other and trying all to instrumentalize the situation for their own personal political benefit, that we can actually get collaboration among all three levels of government so that we can have a coherent response and that federal, provincial, and local agencies know that they have appropriate and adequate political direction and political authority with regards to the strategy and the interventions that are expected but are also appropriate in a democracy. And that was certainly one of the things that was discussed this week at the roundtable, where everybody said, yes, we don't want politicians to interfere in police operations, but we do need politicians to provide adequate frameworks and adequate strategic direction to law enforcement and intelligence agencies rather than go and hide when things fall apart.
Yeah, a novel way of doing politics in Canada. The cynic might say, not that I am. Now, what can you share with us, please, about what would you say was the most substantive piece of testimony that you provided at the round table? What can you share with us?
Well, I think there's a general sense that I think by participants that if the system had worked, we wouldn't have needed the Emergencies Act. And there were puzzling measures that current legislation would arguably have been adequate to deal with these measures, but that the Emergencies Act required provided sort of an accelerant overall and provide additional toolkits to enable the agencies. But I think there was broadly, I would say, among people that I shared the roundtables with, I think some trepidation. Whether they were lawyers, they were social scientists, they were consultants, or they were practitioners. And we heard in particular from the Toronto response by Chief Raymer and the chief executive of the board in Toronto, Ryan Teschner, the way Toronto was prepared and the way Toronto was able to respond. Now, they did have some heads up here, but I think there's a sense here that Convoy 2.0, we actually have to look competent, professional, and we can do this, and that everybody's a little puzzled about the extent to which we were exchanging business cards basically on top of the heap of the rubble in a national capital in a G7 country in the 10th largest economy in the world.
If you want to hear more, subscribe to The Roy Green Show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorites. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review and tell a friend. I'm Roy Green. Have a great weekend.
Hi. Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.